Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast. Jordan Bell, third. Jordan Bell, third. Yo, yo.
Jordan Belfort, stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds. Sipping on Ciroc, trip them up with the words. I done popped the Molly and I think it's be my third. Jordan Belfort, Jordan Belfort. I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Belfort. Jordan Belfort, I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Belfort. Stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds.
What is going on, DGen Nation? Kenny Kim here bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast this week for the RSM Classic. As usual, I'm here with everyone's favorite Canadian, Tyler Tambolin. Tyler, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. We had a good one there. DJ, man, took it down, did his thing, just dominated. Minus 20 in 2020 was the call. I love that one. Good to see. And yeah, you know, DJ's always been a guy that I've liked. He's definitely not been in my favorites, but you know, when I'm going against guys like Bryson and Brooks, so I only care about them if it's for monetary value. DJ's a guy that I definitely root for, and just to see everything with it. We'll get into it in a minute. Before we get into it, definitely want to remind everybody this podcast is sponsored and presented by rotogrinders.com. Head on over to rotogrinders.com/dgen. Get yourself $5 off the first month. Check out everything we're doing over there with the Core Four for all the major sports. Football still going on. Everything I've got going on beyond the scenes with golf. And we'll get into it, Kenny. What was your thoughts, man? The DJ thing's the big deal, but there was a lot going on with this Masters this year.
I mean, it was pretty interesting. I mean, I thought, you know, of course, played pretty easy. I mean, minus 20 is a scoring record, what DJ did. It was really impressive. I mean, Cameron Smith had four rounds in the 60s, first time that's ever happened at the Masters, and he lost by five strokes. So a little bit different this year when it came down to, but what a win by DJ. I wouldn't say it made his career, but you know, as he sort of, everyone thought of him sort of as an underachiever, even with 20 plus wins, but only that one major, so many close calls. And he finally, you know, went over the hump, got the second one. He sort of reminds me of what Phil Mickelson did. I mean, if you remember, Phil Mickelson was one of the best players in the world, but he didn't win a major until he was 34 years old. Everyone questioned why he couldn't win. And then from 34 to 40, he won five majors. I think we can see something like that from Dustin Johnson here. DJ's about 36, I think, right now. I think in the next 4 years, he can get to five majors, maybe even more. Because the way he plays, his game is so good. And when he's on, he is by far the best in the world at this moment in time in every facet of his game. If you look at it, tee to green, he was amazing last week. Ball striking, he was amazing. Around the green, putting. I mean, he's just good at everything. When that happens in events like these, I mean, he's going to win. And you see, what does he have, like a win in like 13 straight years, or I don't know how many years in a row he's won, but it's been a lot. So I could definitely see him doing this for a very long time in the future and getting some more majors on his belt and just rank going up the rankings as one of the best golfers of all time. We'll see how it goes. It's still, I don't even think he's that old, but he's 36. So he he's not the young chicken, but I feel like a Phil Mickelson type of trajectory with him coming up. Outside of him, you know, I actually had bets on Cam Smith and Sung J.M., so it would have been really nice if, you know, DJ fucked up, but he didn't. Yeah. Cam played well. JT was up there. Rory backdoor. Rory again, although he shoot like a 75 on the first day, comes back and finishes in the top five. And then you got some names you didn't really expect up there with Fratelli, Pan, Connors, all finishing in the top 10. But for the most part, man, you look at this leaderboard, everyone was on Cam Smith last week. Cam's been one of the better golfers out there for the last 2 years. DJ, not world number one. JT, world number three. Rory, always a former world number one. Koepka, up there, top 10. Rahm, up there, top 10. Webb, up there, top 10. Reed, up there, top 10. I mean, this is what the Masters is. It's usually these top dogs dueling it out. But, I mean, it wasn't really that much of a duel because DJ whooped that ass. What did you think of the event?
Loved it personally. A few things stood out. You just mentioned one thing. I think this year was much more than anything about the recent form, right? You know, typically we talk about the Masters and course history being so important. And there's some guys up there that definitely have had good results here in the past, but you just mentioned some of them. You know, Cam Smith did one time, but, you know, Cam Smith, Sungjae, Fratelli, Pan, some of these guys that were coming in pretty hot, Connors, they all had the upside. We knew it. And, you know, Hideki was right there doing his classic T13, you know, answer, all those guys. So it was good to see, man. A couple things that stood out for me. One, the scoring records, you know, DJ, it was, I think it was once Tiger got in the room is when DJ finally cracked a little bit and said, yeah, you know, the conditions helped a little bit. He didn't want to play it off. He obviously wants to accept the record, but there's no asterisks for how it got done or anything like that, in my opinion, because they all played the same course at the same time with the same conditions. But is there an asterisk for scoring records? I think there should be, because the conditions and everything that led to it, it just wouldn't play like this. All the stuff about, well, Cam Smith shot four rounds under, first time ever, and didn't win, lost by five strokes. It's great. It's good for him and everything. I'm not downplaying anything. It's just the fact of the scoring records conversation would, to me, has to be a little bit of an asterisk, don't you think, with the way the thing was set up? I know Jack Nicklaus was even on Twitter talking about how this thing was just a dartboard out there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they really couldn't have done nothing about it. I mean, I don't think they wanted it to play that soft. I think that was just no option about it. And yeah, you saw it firm up a little bit on the weekend. The greens get a little bit more brown. But I just don't think they could have done anything. I'm not sure about this, but I think in April, you know, it is still overseeded with rye, but maybe they don't water it as much because they don't have to keep the rye alive, because they want that hot weather coming in and Bermuda coming in. And, you know, into the fairway. I'm talking about the fairways here. Yeah. So that's why it made it so soft, and you didn't see the balls bound a little bit. But I'm not sure why exactly it played as easy as it did.
I know some weather coming in too, and Wednesday, guys were talking about, I talked about it on the Wednesday show over at Roto Grinders. Just, they said even with sub air, it's too bad. It's just not going to be able to get firm here. It's going to be soft. It's going to play soft. Love that even more. The funny part was, one of the comments I heard after was Brooks, man, I love his mentality. I love how much he wants to win. I'm hyper competitive. You know, I get pissed off when I'm losing and not winning at the same time. You know, it's one of those things where you're almost more mad to lose than you're happy when you win, right? You just sort of, you're out there to win. That's what your goal is, your objective. And then when you come up short, you're almost more disappointed in that, because you feel like you should have been in the top in the performer, you know, the winner's circle and performing well. And he said, you know, oh, of course it's, you know, DJ is going to win. It's playing like this with, you know, softer conditions. That just sets right up for guys like him and Rory. And it's like, man, come on, you know, you still played well. You could have played better and you still got a T7, but I loved his reaction to that when he's like, ooh, a top seven. I'm not over here. I'm not excited, he says. So still love the guy for that. You know, love his mentality going out there, just doing his thing, playing to win every single time like most of these guys are. But he's got more of that, you know, edge or that competitor's mentality that shows. JT, man, another thing, this guy just cannot putt. It's incredible. How many times this year, Kenny, have we been on this podcast talking about JT playing his B or B-minus game and being right in the mix? I know he's 8 strokes back here. It's definitely different. And DJ missed some shorties as well. Not saying that, but just, man, JT just, man, oh, man, it just
kills me. I don't know another golfer that hits so many approaches within 15 feet.
It's insane.
You know, what JT does. Like, yeah, every approach that he hits is like 12 to 15 feet, you know, unless it's with a wedge. And then it's like 10 feet. Like, his iron game is unbelievable. But, like, I don't know what's happened to his putter. It's just, it just sucks at this moment in time. Like, the way he's been striking the ball, I'd say the last year, how many wins does he have in the last year? I think 2, maybe 3. He could have doubled that easily.
Yeah.
Way his iron play is, if he could just putt. It's so horrible. I didn't have any of them, so I was cool with it.
Love the guy so much. I think JT's the man. Like, I always talk about it, just an assassin out there. Just, I love his attitude and mentality as well. Still plays it off pretty good, but man, it's just like so frustrating to watch as a fan. DJ taking it down was amazing. I love the emotion that he showed. Everyone's talked about the same thing with it, but I thought, you know, Amanda Baleonis handled it quite well, and I thought her comments, you know, as he really said, like, I literally cannot talk right now. You know, that's just what it was. But like she said, I think she summed it up the best out of all of them. There was some good stuff on the Golf Channel after and, you know, everything there. But she said, you know, we know that the problem is we don't see what you do, but we know the way you just dominate these fields that you work so hard. And it's just true, right? It all came out. He wanted this one so bad. It took him forever. I know he didn't want Austin crying on the green there, but it was just his brother. It came out of him. These guys grind, man. And to have his brother there, Paulina, everyone. I just love to see it. It's a great story, like you said. And it's going to seem like recency bias. I know that the guys on the Golf Channel, you know, Chamblee and these guys talked about it as well. But I don't think it's recency bias when you're saying you're going to see this guy win a bunch more majors over the next 5 years. This isn't the same as like Morikawa just won a major. Now let's get on him for everything in the future. Obviously, he's going to have his ups and downs and he's young. This is DJ, 24 wins, whatever it is now. He's up there in the upper echelon. I like your Mickelson take. He's sort of the guy that's actually doing it. And I definitely think, you know, he's second or third or first. He's winning or top three in everything, no matter what, all the time. And he said in his interview afterwards, like, I'm on. I don't think I'm going to lean off at all. If you guys think so, I'm playing 8, 9, 10 more years and then rest back with the family. But, you know, I'll be back at the Masters forever. And he said, I'm going to keep going after it and taking these things down. So I really do believe him when he says that.
Yeah, I mean, the guys, he's going to win more majors. I don't doubt it. Yeah, I think a lot of us were waiting for him to sort of crumble. I mean, we've seen it in the past with him, with the lead in the major. But he, you know, it got to within one stroke on the sixth hole or something like that. And then I think M bogeyed and he birdied, and that was basically it. It was over after that. And I mean, he just kept growing the lead, and it was done. Personally, for me, a good week in cash because, of course, I had Dustin Johnson as one of my cash game cornerstones. Pretty easy play at $10,000. I mean, I didn't think you had to overthink that one. But, you know, I had him. Koepka finished in seventh. Matsuyama finished in 13th. And Poulter finished in 25th. So all four of my cash game cornerstones in the top 25. My article this week that I posted on Wednesday, I went 12 for 12 and made cuts, a whole bunch of top 15, top 25. So it was a pretty good week. I didn't get the right combo I wanted in GPPs, but another winning week. It's been a lot of them here since the new season started. I'm just going to go ahead and say that part from the restart to the Tour Championship didn't count. It didn't exist. That's how I'm going about that in my mind, because it's been a lot more like normal here since the beginning of this season. So the DFS game is going pretty well. Bets didn't work out. Like I said, I had Cam, I had M, I had Poulter top 20. He bogeyed 16, or I think it was 7. To drop out of the top 20. That one hurt. That was my favorite bet of the week in my article. So that one didn't go out. But I did have Cam Smith as a top 20 bet also. So that sort of made a little bit back, but I still lost money this week in gambling. How'd you do?
Yeah, I wish the whole week could disappear for that factor, because EVR, man, this guy withdrew. That was bad. Oh, yeah. He was minus one, and then definitely something went down. I mean, you don't just withdraw from the Masters over a few bad holes.
Maybe his ankles got cold.
Yeah,
you know,
for
the
sure.
Jogger, his ankles
tiny pants
got
that
cold.
He
wears. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what happened.
I believe it. I really liked him coming in, though, man. That was a problem for me. Coke Rack, another guy, just, you know, we'll talk about him. He's in this field. So he was one for me. And, you know, I was just all over Dustin Johnson at 10K. My thought process was, you know, get the guys above him, Rom, Rory, into the lineup so that you could, instead of just starting with DJ, as I thought most would. And I think it was just a matter of how the builds went out. A couple more things, and then we'll do some shout outs here. But what was your thoughts on Bryson? Bernhard Langer took him down. So
yeah, I know. I mean, like I said last week, I mean, I wrote it in my article. It's either you're going to go all in on him or you're going to fade him completely. I think that was the only way to go with Bryson this week. I mean, he
sort of looked bad when he was making excuses.
Yeah, like, I was just going to say, if I can tell you my DFS results, Kenny, it's something weird happened. And I got a little bit dizzy, and my results just didn't pan out this week. So that's what happened.
It seemed like a little bitch move. You know what I'm saying? Everyone talking about him the whole week, and he struggles a little bit. And he's like, oh, my tummy hurt. Hey, you know what I'm saying? Like, it definitely seemed like a little bitch move. If he just owned up to it, I think it would have been a lot better. Like, man, my game sucks. Didn't work out. I'm coming back in April, and I'm doing the same fucking thing. If he said that, okay, I could get on board. But that was a little bitch thing he did, personally, in my opinion. I didn't have any of them. I think the day before I was hammered, and I had some Quinella bets just in case, because I felt like some weird, you know, having no Bryson on any of my cards, on any of the DFS. So I put, like, you know, him and Brooks, him and DJ, and, like, him and Rom in Quinella, you know, first and second. So that was the extent of my bets. And, you know, of course, those didn't pay off. But, yeah, I mean, he acted like a little bitch. I didn't like the way he plays. I think at some point in time, what he needs to do is come to Augusta early, as early as possible, and get on these greens and learn the intricacies of the greens so he can putt better. You know, he doesn't have that green book. He's not going to be able to have it there. So what he has to do, you know, it seems like he's a really tactical type guy, and that's why he relies on that green book so much on every different course. And that's why maybe he's one of the, you would say he's top five best putter in the world the last year. You know, strokes gained putting, he's up there. But on this course, he just sucks ass. And I think that has something to do with it. What he needs to do is get out there with his caddy and you know, screw greens book. Just get every read, get every putt, and learn those greens back and forth instead of being last in strokes gained putting every year you come here. So in April, I think that's what he needs to do. I think his game will still work if he tries to hit it as far as he can. He just needs to learn how to fucking putt and not hit it into, like, you know, the woods on 13 on occasion. That would be cool, too.
The ball that got lost was great content, though. And the thing about
that got lost in the rough. It wasn't – he lost that one ball in the rough. It wasn't even in, like, the trees and stuff. There was no marshals, no fans. They couldn't find his ball in the rough, which is a little bit thicker than I've ever seen at Augusta, which I think didn't matter at all since the scoring was crazy. I think they knew that they couldn't get the greens to play as firm as they wanted. So they rose the rough a little bit. Because when I went there, I mean, like, you know, the rough was, like, as tall as the Muni I play at Fairway every weekend. And you saw a little bit of thickness there this week, but it didn't even matter. Scoring was still crazy.
I laughed when someone said that one of the marshals that were close by probably just didn't like Bryson and was standing on the ball the whole time as the rest looked around. And then the second part of that was, you know, I think it was Epat was talking about it there. Rom just did not give a shit. You saw him, like, peruse through. He was barely looking at the ground. He was just trying to make himself look busy. And that's the one thing I'll say about Bryson. Like, no matter what, I obviously don't like the guy. I talk about him enough. I respect what he's doing. He's building himself up. Good for him. All that. I'm like you. I don't like the excuses. I don't need that stuff, man. It was still very impressive what he did for how bad he played and for the bounce back and all that stuff. I'm never going to disregard his game. I think he will do well here. Like you said, he'll find out some things, the early mornings, the no greens book. There's so many factors to why he probably didn't play his best here. It's just things like the 67 and it's all good. Talk your game. I like how Brooks does it a little bit more, but you know, it's just one of those things. And I think it's some guys like certain guys, some guys don't. He rubs me the wrong way, but there's no doubt he's a talented golfer and an incredible talent that we'll be using a lot of different golf courses throughout the years and DFS and betting on him and all that stuff, and expect a lot more from him in the future. So
I think it would have been better if I don't mind him talking that shit in the beginning. He's like, I'm playing this as a par 67. That's fine. It's just after you fuck up, just take ownership. You know what I'm saying? Don't make excuses.
That's all it is.
That would have been fine with me. I would have no problem if he has that bravado to think what he does. That's cool. Sometimes you need that little bit of an edge when you're going into a tournament. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We saw, if you watched Last Dance, Michael Jordan would make up shit to go into a game and kill a guy. It's just what I'm saying is when he comes back with stuff like dizzy and all that, I just don't have enough time. We don't need to keep spending time on it, but I guess we'll see what he does in the future here. Like, he definitely doesn't have this place figured out yet. The driver was pretty off. Like I said, impressive of his bounce back. But other than that, it was kind of like Mike Tyson said, man, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face. That was exactly what happened to Bryson. He had a plan. It didn't work out. Couple shout outs, Kenny, before we get into the listener league, man, or unless you got something else, but our main fill-in guy, Ryan Baroff.
Oh yeah, big week.
Huge week. 555 for $200,000. So congrats to him, first off. That was incredible. And then Gup, our other main man, this guy goes on Sunday and ships the 555 showdown for 50K. And he had a bunch in the running, I know, going into the weekend. And so good for him as well, right? That's your guy over there too.
Yeah.
You're over at Gup's Corner. We'll talk about that where we find us later. But congrats to Baroff and to Gup, amongst others.
In Gup's final thoughts, he had DJ as the winner. I think last year in his final thoughts for the Masters, he had Tiger as the winner. So he's doing pretty damn well when it comes to the Masters. And Baroff, you know, he's going to be on here again soon. One of us is going to miss a pod here sometime soon. Baroff is our co-host.
Resident fill-in, man.
Resident fill-in. So he can come back and talk to about this. A great week by both those guys. I'm really happy for them. Really happy for them. All right, so let's go to the listener league for this week. Let me pull it up. I had it up, and you got me hyped for Gup and Baroff. All right,
Another big winner. $750.
Yep. The winner this week was Comedy Mogul. I'm trying to figure out what the hell his thing is. I think he's like smoking a cigar, wearing like a captain's hat with headphones. I don't know who he is. But Comedy Mogul, first place this week with 617 points. He had Dustin Johnson, of course, 142 points. DJ was 42% owned. Smart move there, DJ Nation. That was the way to go. Webb Simpson, 90 points. finished in 10th, 7.81% owned. Finau, 33% owned, only 66 points. Not his best showing at a major, finished in 38th. Sungjae, again, really solid. You know, the Sungjae bet I had, I didn't even remember I had him until like halfway through Saturday. I think it was like a drunk bet I put in like 2 weeks ago at like 66-1. I was looking through my card. I was like, oh shit, I got Sungjae at 66-1. It was great. And I was rooting for him, and DJ fucked that up. So Sungjae finished second, 110 points, 3.75% owned. Cam, everyone loved Cam, 23% owned, 123.5 points. And Munoz, who's one of my favorite players down low, I actually used him in cash. That's how much I liked his game last week. 18.9% owned, 85.5 points. Finished in 19th place. What do you think of the lineup?
I love it. Yeah, good lineup, man. You know, two guys really, you know, you knew DJ would have the ownership, Finau as well. So that's fine. But then he made sure to cover it off with Webb and Sungjae, like you said, his avatar. Looks like a guy that was expecting to win this thing, right? Kick back with the cigar and the hat, whatever it might be. And then Cam and Munoz are great. Of note, he could have swapped Munoz. Well, there's lots of guys he could have swapped. I just thought this would be funny because he's got the Korean Sungjae in there. He could have had the Canadian Connors in instead of Munoz, and he would add 0.5 more and still took it down for the boys, Kenny and myself, right? You get the Korean and the Canadian in there. But overall, extremely good lineup. Got him already added to the end of the year to the Tournament of Champions Listener League with us. And then he'll join us in the three-man this week as well. So congrats to Comedy Mogul. A couple shout-outs in the top 10. Dak, 16-16. Guy's a crusher, always up there. And then also L. Bullard, 64. Lloyd Bullard, the man, down in 10th place. So we'll see those guys again, I'm guessing, this week. I'll be a little bit smaller, but you guys, last week was good. We got you, DK paid it back, paid it forward for the missed week. And it was only 1,300 guys in there out of 1,500. So lots of extra money in the mix, right?
Yep, Lloyd's a good guy. Met him at the DFS Open, really nice guy. So nice little pickup by him. What did he finish, like in the top 10?
10th place, yep, right up there
good,
in the top 10.
Good work there, Lloyd, good work. All right, so let's get to this week. So the PGA Tour heads to St. Simons Island, Georgia for the second and last event of this year. The RSM Classic will be played at two of Sea Island Resort's golf clubs, the Seaside Course and the Plantation Course. Golfers will be playing each of the two courses during the first two rounds, then finish the weekend at the Seaside Course. They do this so they can, you know, get a full field and still be able to finish, with the limited amount of daylight that we have. It used to be called the McGladrey's Classic. You know, every iteration of this tournament has been played here. In 2015, it was the first year they actually went with the two-course rotation. I probably focus more on Seaside, but the one thing I will say is the Plantation Course played a little bit tougher last year. Prior to that, the Plantation Course was the big-time birdie fest, but DL3 came and redesigned it prior to last year's tournament. It made the course a little bit more difficult. This was basically caused by the new greens. They were really firm. And DL3 added a bunch more slope to these greens. Now, golfers are forced to hit certain quadrants of these greens at the Plantation Course. There were still plenty of low scores. I think there were a couple of 63s still down there. But it definitely made the course a little bit harder. Now, let's see. I'm not really sure if it's going to play that same way this year at the Plantation Course, just because, you know, the greens had a little bit more time to grow in. Let's see if they soften up, or if they're still going to be really firm like they are last year. Something we're going to have to pay attention to in the next couple of days leading up to the tournament. I'll probably have an update on how firm or how soft or how I think that course is going to play in my article on Wednesday. This is also a place where you get a lot of people who live in the area, the Sea Island Mafia. You got like Charles Howell III, Harris Inglis, Zach Johnson, Kuchar, Kiz, both Kiz, Kizery and Kisner, Harmon, Poston, Swofford, Chris Kirk, Charles Howell, and Kevin Kisner. They're like part-time residents. They all have wins here. Prior to 2017, the Sea Island Mafia really didn't do that great. But since then, there's been a lot of good play from them. ZJ, Kirk, Kisner, Harmon, six top eight finishes the last 3 years. Poston finished 14th last year. CH3 won in 2018. Also, a lot of golfers play college golf in the SEC have experience here, as the SEC championship is usually played on this course. Now, weather is definitely going to be a factor. The Seaside course is a link-style course where the wind can play havoc. This could favor the large European contingent in the field this year. Like, we haven't seen this many Euros, you know, before on this course. But because of the Masters is a lead-in, many of them stayed to play in this event. You know, the winds look like they could get up to like 20 miles per hour, some gusts this weekend. So it could be something that makes them feel more comfortable, these Euros that are in the field. A couple of correlated courses, Harbortown and Waialae Country Club. Six of the last 10 winners at Sea Island have had a top five or better at either Harbortown or Waialae before their win here. All right, so let's get to the meat of the course, Seaside course. It's a 7,000-yard par 70, four par 3s, two par 5s. There should be plenty of roll on the fairways, and both the par 5s should be reachable by a lot of golfers, as long as the wind isn't crazy. The course is a traditional link-style course with the ocean breeze playing a big factor. Off the tees, golfers will see average side fairways. They actually get a little bit more narrow as you get closer to the hole. This leads to a lot of golfers using less than driver off the tee. You get like 70% of fairways are hit, and like 75% of greens are hit here. So, I mean, basically this can come down to a putting contest on who's the better Bermuda putter. If they miss the fairway, they're going to deal with bunkers, marshlands, seaside vegetation, sandy native areas, and a lot of water. The greens can play firm. Again, it depends on the weather. And then on approach shots, of course, they're going to see Bermuda grass greens, 11.5 on the stimp, good amount of slope and undulation. Plantation course is a 7,058-yard par 72, four par 5s. All the par 5s will be reachable and by most. None are longer than 560 yards. Of course, I told you about the redesigned DL3. Definitely played a little bit more difficult last year. But this is more of a parkland course. It's more inland. So, you know, if the wind does pick up, you won't see it too much at this course because of the trees blocking the wind. It could be something to think about for showdown plays if you do see the wind picking up this week. The greens are Bermuda grass, similar stimp meter rating. So that's how it's going to go. You can go low here, but it did play a little bit more difficult. So we'll see how it goes the next couple of days, the more we hear on the Golf Channel. Tambo, what are you looking for this week?
Just looked into the past quite a bit here, man. Like, you know, it's not so much for the course history angle, Kenny, but what I talked about a little bit earlier, like, again, the Masters showed a few of the other tournaments we've been watching lately. It's been all to do with, like, the most recent form, right? I don't know if it's because of the startup, because of the, you know, we didn't even talk about this again, but another major with no patrons obviously made it, you know, a little bit easier in that sense as well. Some guys talked about that again. So I just think, you know, tee to green and approach, scrambling a little bit, that's sort of been what the recipe's been here. In the past, Bermuda greens, very important. You talked about, you know, some of the residents and the seaside stuff, the Sea Island Mafia, all this, you know, conversation that goes on with that. Again, I'm still going to look at that as a bonus, but, you know, Bermuda greens, recent form. I also kind of like looking, because they were so recent, the Sanderson, the Wyndham, and the Bermuda, all on Bermuda greens, those courses. And if you look at the leaderboards, and then you think about everybody that we're going to talk about here of who could win this event, it's sort of littered with those guys. So another thing, first timers that can get theirs here. I think this is a spot we've seen that happen. And then all of the last five winners here have had at least one top 20 coming in their last five events. So again, back to recent form, as normally is the case, but I think just even more so in a year like this, that's sort of what I'll be focusing on as far as everything as a whole goes going into this event.
All right, that sounds good. Let's get to these tiers for this week. You know, we got starting this 10K range. We got Russell Henley all the way up to Webb Simpson. How are you going about it this week, Tambo?
I think it's going to be Webb, Hatton, and Henley for me. You know, Sungjae might get some love off of, you know, the finish there last week, but which is rightfully so. The guy looked incredible. Nothing wrong with this game. The approach game. I watched pretty much the whole thing wire to wire, and you know, between everything else, the around the green stuff looked good. Any bunker play, basically anything he had to do, he had it in his bag and made it happen. But I do wonder a little bit about a Masters hangover. And the other thing is, so Webb is just right there for $200 more, man. So I got this down for Webb: third in the field for total strokes gained over the last 20 rounds, decent showing at the Masters. And as much as you really didn't see much of him because he was never quite in the mix enough, you saw some shots here and there and whatnot, but I forget who it was. Someone posted the stats. You could actually, you know, for what they could gather as far as the stats were, obviously it's the Masters. So you don't get any of that stuff, like, you know, the breakdown for showdown, what everyone was trying to use. But, you know, he really didn't have his putter, and he still got, what was he, 10th or something in the Masters here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Another guy, again, 11 strokes back of first. I get it, but that's totally separate to what we're talking about here. And I think, yeah, just another good showing for him at $200 more than Sungjae, as much as he finished behind him. I think if we're taking long-term upside, all of these factors into consideration, I got to go with Webb. And then Hatton, listen, never played well at the Masters, continued it again. There's going to be a few guys like that this week where I'm going to just push out everything we just saw or results that we get from the Masters. And he's been on fire otherwise. So if people are going to avoid him at 10.4, I like him a lot more than Tommy at 10.7. I'll just say that. And then Henley, I get that he's, you know, going to be the chalk of the week. It's, you know, $100 more than DJ was last week. I'm not sure why he's priced here, but as far as all around game goes coming in, tee to green approach the last 20 rounds, even if you bring it out further than that, he's way up there, if not first. Three wins that he has are on Bermuda. And I saw a little something there, you know, with the, I think it was Bamford Golf. Steve Bamford posted it in his article. Good read every week. If you guys don't follow Steve at Bamford Golf, good article that comes out first every week that I always like to dig into. And it was just about, I'm always looking for little nuggets within. And one of them was around his OWGR ranking for Henley, where basically he has this week and next week to get into the top 50, right? To pull off all those perks that you get from being in the top 50 in the world, as far as the world rankings are concerned. So fully expect him to show up here. Obviously results in the past, you know, correlation events, things like that. We already talked about, he fits all that narrative as well, but at 10-1, I know he'll be popular. It's another week where I think you could go with someone above him and get him as your second guy in. We'll talk about that as we go throughout the tiers, or start it off with him and then just try and get unique amongst the middle. The guy that just won our Lister League, Comedy Mogul, he went without. So back to Baroff winning. Baroff had JT and DJ in his lineup. So he just needed JT to outdo Rory, Rahm, and Brooks and whatnot on Sunday. I was chatting with them then. So we were sort of rooting that on. But then you've got this spot here, you know, like Comedy Mogul started with DJ and went down, but just found some unique guys like Sungjae and Webb, who were still excellent plays, just with much lower ownership. So I think that's how you're looking to use Henley this week, if you're going about it for especially anything in larger field. What are your thoughts up here at the top?
So I had an extremely hard time trying to make a cash lineup this week because of all the European contingent in this 9 and 10K range. I try to avoid first-timers who are playing a course in cash, at least from a cornerstones, especially if they're higher priced. You know, I might take a risk or flyer on like a hot guy who's low priced, like Munoz last week. I don't think he played the Masters before, but he was hot at 6,700. I felt like I could take that risk. At this price range, I don't know if I want to. So I had a really, really hard time trying to make cash lineup. So I just went ahead and bit the bullet, and I'm going to start with my first cash game cornerstone. It's going to be Webb Simpson at $11,200. You know, it's not usually what I do, but from like 9,100 and up, I just don't feel comfortable using anyone. Like Sungjae, The Hangover, Fleetwood, I can never, he just doesn't win. You know, Hatton maybe, but he missed a cut last week. Again, two guys, Fleetwood, Hatton, who haven't played this course before. Henley, back-to-back missed cuts at this event. Fitzpatrick hasn't really played this event before. English, really poor course history here. Day, you never know a Day. I'm not going to use him in cash. Usti, again, Euro Tour, even here, I'm not going to use him in cash probably in this type of event at this price of 9,300. Last week at 7,900, at the Masters, where I know he's not just going to fuck around and say my back hurts and leave. Okay, yes, I'll use Usti then, but not this week. Lowry, again, another guy who you're not sure about, who hasn't played this course very often. Neiman coming off COVID. So I just went ahead and started with Webb as my cash game cornerstone. You already went through every reason why we should be playing him. Being 200, I thought about Sungjae, but 200 more for a guy with this much more class, especially at this course, I'm going Webb up top, and I'm playing Hatton in GPPs. I think hopefully people are going to stay off him because of his miscut last week. But like you said, he just sucks the Masters. He's not that great at it, but the guy can make birdies with the best of them. This thing can, a lot of the times, become a birdie fest if it does come, you know, if the weather is nice and it's soft. We'll see how these winds play out. There's usually a ton of birdies here. So I'm going to play Hatton in GPPs. Now, moving down to this 9K range, like I said, I sort of stopped at 9,100. So you could probably guess my next cash game cornerstone is going to be Sebastian Munoz at $9,000. This guy's just been playing exceptional golf here recently. I mean, if you look at his recent form, 19th, 14th, 9th, 27th, 23rd, a couple of 8th places, you know, 18th. The guy's just been like a top 20, top 15 machine here. And he finished third here, I think, last season. Really good with his short irons. He's 11th in the field in proximity from 125 to 150 yards. You're going to see a lot of wedge play when it comes down to this. Top 10 in birdies, you know, top 15 in drafting points. One interesting stat, like from this course, if you look, I think this was prior to last year. Let me go down and look this up. When it comes to par three scoring, like almost like 75% of the golfers that finished top three here with recordable stats were like top 75 for par three scoring the year they finished top three. Usually this is a weak field. So being top 75 in par three scoring is actually pretty damn high up in this field. And, you know, Munoz, really good par three score. I think he's 13th in this field in the last 100 rounds. So I got him. I'm going to play Neiman as well, I think, this week. I want to bite the bullet. A little worried about COVID. But the stats, just seeing the lineup with the approach game, good from 400 to 450 yards. You're going to see the majority of all approaches, all of the par fours come in that range. Again, proximity from 125 to 150 and 150 to 175. You're going to see a ton of approaches there. He's top 20 in both of those. Top 10 in birdies, a better game, all in the last 100 rounds. So I do like him. And then, I'm not sure. I'll probably play somebody else. Who do you like in this range, Tambo?
I like a couple of guys at the top, actually. I like Matthew Fitzpatrick a little bit, just because another guy that no one's going to go back to after last week, the price increase, all of that. I think he just fits the narrative as far as you mentioned, if there's some wind picks up, the coastal stuff, everything there. But him and Lowry actually both stand out to me. Lowry's much cheaper, but these are guys that people may avoid with some of the names that are around them. They've got, good stats. And if you look at their tee to green and approach form coming in last 20 rounds type of thing, these guys actually pop quite a bit for me, more so than risking it with a guy like you already mentioned, Day and Usti are right there that nobody ever likes to play. Don't like them as much at these price tags at this event. Harris English, incoming form, tee to green and approach. I do like him. And then I'm with you on Munoz at the bottom. I actually like him more than Neiman. The thing about Neiman, it's not just, we'll see what his ownership's like. Neiman's an excellent golfer, but the price tag seems high. Haven't, seen much here lately with the COVID stuff. Really, if you look at the last 20 rounds, he's barely gaining on approach, which I think is extremely important here. It's been a lot more off the tee. And then I really do tend to like him a little bit better on bent grass than Bermuda. That's why I wanted to play him last week at $7,400. I thought he would have been a great play at the Masters. Now there's a bunch more question marks. And while, yes, all the other stuff does pop, par five scoring over the last 50 rounds is not very good either. So I do have some worry for Neiman there. But I like your Munoz call. I like Lowry. I like Fitzpatrick. These are more large field stuff. I think English is a fine play anywhere at 9,700 as maybe in a lineup with Henley right away out of the gate, just drop down that $400 and use him with him, or as a pivot off of Henley, I think would be fine as well. Definitely a good play to use in there and really pops across all the stat categories for me.
English seems interesting because you look at his price, $9,700, and the way he's been playing golf, I thought that was really good value. He was all like, at first look, I was like, okay, he's going to be one of my cash game cornerstones. And then you look at his track record at this event, and you're like, I don't understand how he's so bad at this event. I think he's only made like three cuts or something out of the last eight or so times he's played this event. I could be wrong. I'm not exactly sure. I'll bring it up right now here, but I don't really understand why he's been so poor. But then I look at his numbers, and like I said, the majority of all approaches are going to come 125, 150, 150 to 175. In the last 100 rounds, he's 130th in this field from 125 to 150. He's 100th in this field from 150 to 175. So maybe this course just doesn't suit his eye. He's missed two of the last six. He's missed four of his last six cuts at this event. Now, is he a different golfer now?
I think
people going to be off of him because they see this course history? Like, if they're going to be off of him, I'm thinking of playing him in GBPs because I believe you too. I think he's a better golfer now. But those numbers are shocking, especially when it comes to that short iron play and how bad he's been.
It's a good point. And Kenny, honestly, I think it's almost like this time last year when we sort of had this same conversation or revelation with Webb Simpson, right? A guy that was just better than what he had been, than what people's perspective was. Maybe it was a little bit further back, but you know what I mean? Now he's 11-2 in this field. Look at English, Northern Trust. He got blown out by what? DJ? That's it. Second place. 12th at the Tour Championship, 4th at the U.S. Open, which I didn't think would suit him by any means, but he's just been playing some great golf. 10th at the CJ Cup, 28th at the Zozo, didn't get to play in the Masters. This guy should be ready to rock and roll here at you know, 9,700. You could almost argue it's a bit of a value, and I'll have to look at his betting number because, you know, it wasn't on my radar until you and I just sort of had this mini back and forth here. But since the restart, all those top 20s too, even before the Northern Trust, he went on a string of 17th, 13th, 18th, 19th, 23rd, before getting second to DJ at the Northern Trust when, you know, he still was like two ahead of the next guy, but DJ blew the field out. So I don't know.
The Northern Trust is what stuck out to me because of him coming in second, and that was the supreme birdie fest. When DJ's like shoot 30 under or something crazy like that, and English is like 21 or 22 under. This event, a lot of the time, you're going to get 21, 22 under, 20 under, right around there. It's a birdie fest. And I was like, man, this should work for him. And I looked, I'm like, man, he literally sucks ass, and he lives here. He lives here. You know what I'm saying?
So, I think it's a different year in front of us. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to this AK range. I'll go with my third cash game cornerstone. Again, I'm going a little bit aggressive this week because I just couldn't find a build that I like. I like Brian Harman at $8,500. The guy, this is a little bit more of a cut maker play here. The guy's made 11 straight cuts in a row. I don't think he's missed a cut at Sea Island. He finished fourth here a couple years ago, so he has the upside. So I do like Harman. Again, good on those 400 to 450 yard par fours, above average with those short irons. Really good. He's a good birdie maker too, so he can get you those points even if he doesn't finish highly and expect him to make the cut. So I like him. I think the one glaring price, crazy price, is Rose at $8,400. It seems really a lot cheaper, and you saw glimpses of his game coming back last week. I think he was near the first round leader, or he was up there in the first couple of rounds. It seemed like, you know, it was getting there at some point in time. I mean, I know he hasn't been playing as well lately, but in the last 100 rounds, he's second in the field in birdies or better game. So I think at that price, I can go ahead and take some flyers. Do you think he's going to be popular at 8,400?
I think he's going to be extremely popular. I actually don't like Rose this week. I think if you look last week, a lot of what was out there and what you saw was to do with the putter. And if you take it over the last 50 rounds, you know, he'll pop in some of the scoring stuff, but you have to be, you know, in realm and on point to score. And I think, like I said, even last week, it was a lot of the putter, and that's why he disappeared over the weekend and why you didn't see very much of him after the fact. What did he end up finishing? Like 23rd? And he started out, what was he, almost first round leader, like you said. So again, didn't fall off completely, but it wasn't like the ultimate finish. And before that, what's he got? You know, 17th at the Zozo, 52nd CJ Cup. Like, he has not been the Justin Rose we're used to. And I think everyone is going to see that price and just say, boom, there's a glaring value. And like you already mentioned, there's guys there. There's Kisner, there's Harman, who you're on. There's, you know, Fratelli, Connors, that just played well, that, you know, again, you could say the same thing about them, but they're like a much cheaper Sungjae Im, and you can go down. And they actually had decent numbers last week for the numbers that were pulled that, you know, people are estimating, but it's good enough to go with for me. I also watched it. I've got the eye test on it. So I don't know. I'm not as high on this $8,400 price tag for Rose as what some might be. And then when you drop down, we're about to get to it, but the bottom of the 8K range is loaded as well, going into the 77 and above range also.
Yeah, I like Kisner as well in this range. I like Fratelli in this range. What he did last week was pretty nice. He has that. I think he's going to be very he hits the ball pretty damn far. I know it's not going to work out this week. This is a lesson driver course, but I was sort of surprised at how far he hits the ball. I think he's an up-and-comer, someone we're going to be – I know he's already has a win, but I think he's someone that we're going to be hearing of a little bit more here in the future with Fratelli. You know, I'll play a little bit of maybe some Matt Hughes down here. We'll see how it goes. I haven't really made too many decisions in this range other than Kisner and Harman and Fratelli. Who are you playing? You like Kokrak? Are you going to go back?
Yeah, I got to go back to Kokrak. First timer, got to remember, right? Got to give him a lift. He was actually not bad on day one. It just, you know, completely disappeared that, you know, cut off second round into the second round and just went way off the rails. So, you know, I don't think I can play him at the Masters and then disappear on him right here. You know, especially with this field, I don't really want to avoid that. He's obviously been playing incredible coming in. If you go back over the last 20 rounds, he's leading this field in total strokes gained. And he's still getting there a lot through tee to green approach putter, or off the tee, sorry, approach some putter. But, you know, we knew that coming in, that could be the case. But I have to go back to him at that. But I do like Kisner more, to your point that you were just talking about there. I like your Harman call. there. And then going down for me, it's going to be right at 8K. It's Doc Redman. Couple things on him. So I'm expecting him to be popular, but I don't think with Mackenzie Hughes getting some love, Zach Johnson, who was getting love before the Masters, I get that. Maybe the Bad Masters can keep his ownership down. So he could get slept on, and I don't mind him as well. But with Gooch and Pan and all these guys underneath, I don't think Redmond's going to blow up and be the 30% guy. We'll have to wait and see. But he'll be owned, and that's fine. I'll have to differentiate elsewhere. But one thing about Redmond that stood out to me, and I mentioned these in the top, was not necessarily correlation courses, but just recent form on Bermuda. And he's got a third at the Wyndham, which is on Bermuda, a fourth at the Bermuda Championship, which is on Bermuda. And then you talk about guys getting their first time wins here. This is, you know, the prime spot. Who's the guy we've been waiting to get his win? It's Doc Redmond. And yeah, so at 8,000, he fits every type of build. Yeah, you'll have to, you know, monitor what you're doing with your overall construction. But I think at that price tag, I got to go back at 8,000. It just seems right. So I'll go there.
I like that. Let's go back. Let's go into the 7K range this week. This is weird. I never play him. But I think my favorite play up top is CT Pan.
I thought you were going to say Brendan Todd.
No. CT Pan. I never play him. But, I mean, again, correlated course, Heritage, he won. Yeah. Right? He won Heritage. Really good with his short irons. Like, he's top 16 in the field in the last 100 rounds in both 125 to 150 and 150 to 175. I feel like he's a short course type of guy where you play him. But then again, last week he finished 10th of the Masters, which is crazy. But I like CT Pan. He's got to have some confidence. And even with his performance last week, I don't think he's going to be popular at this price, 7,900. I seriously doubt he's going to be more than 10, 12% at most going in there. So I like him up top. Again, I'm going to play my guys here that I always usually play, Danny Burns. I like those guys. One guy I'm sort of interested in is I like Matt Wallace at $7,600. Now, this is the type of price you can get down for these Euros who haven't played this course before. I know a lot of them have more talent, but Wallace is a hell of a golfer. If that wind picks up, he should be all right. I like him a lot this week, and I like Austin Cook. I think the way he's been playing here recently, a runner-up a few weeks ago, came back, had a nice little finish a few weeks ago. Didn't he win here before? Am I right? He at least had a high finish here at this course. So I like Austin Cook. Who do you like in this top range?
Yeah, Austin Cook's one of the first-time winners that you mentioned. It was back in 17. And I like that. CT Pan's interesting at the top. I like Gooch a little bit, but I like Redmond more. But CT Pan, the thought process was, like you said, a little bit of momentum coming in. That win at Heritage is actually interesting because he was the one that had to wait the longest to get into the Masters because it was right after Tiger had won. So he waited 19 months to get into his Masters here and then comes out and does that. Quintessential guy when it comes to fairways and greens, that's basically his game. And that's what we're looking for here. If he makes some putts, definitely could be interesting. And like you said, I don't think he gets as much buzz. He just keeps that balance in that range because some will want him, Redmond, ZJ, Mack Hughes, you know, Rose, who you talked about, up and down from there. And then all the ownership is going to be right here. But again, you got to find a way to get different. Burns, McCarthy. Burns is like Redmond 2.0. It's one of those guys, Burns or Redmond, that we're just waiting on the win, right? We're expecting it at any point. This would be the spot to do it. Don't call him Bermuda Burns for nothing. Obviously has great results coming in. $7,700. I think, you know, that's a steal. Denny McCarthy, same sort of thing. We're paying $9,600, $9,700 for him in slightly worse fields than this, but, you know, still not like this is a world beating field or anything like that. So another guy been right there. Also noted on him, he's got a top six recently at all three of the Bermuda Greens courses, Bermuda Championship, Wyndham, and Sanderson. He's got a top six or better at all three of them since the restart. So at $7,700, he seems extremely cheap for me. Really like him in all formats. You mentioned Wallace. You know, all these guys in here are a little bit interesting to me. Straka, Wallace, Cook, all those guys probably yeah. Cook the most. Obviously has the win before. Another thing I saw, it'll come up later. I forget where I've got it here, but you know, Bamford was posting this in his article as well. Just again, look for these nuggets. So I think it's a great guy to go and follow. If you don't, you probably do already, but just saying it's some good stuff in there. So shout out to Steve, but he's got the stuff from back in the day, the Jones Cup and the SEC individual results. And Austin Cook is littered all over those. So it was no surprise when he got his win here. So that sort of leads me back his way at $7,500. And then Ches Reavie right there at the on the number. I'll let you go into the bottom of the 7Ks. But Ches Reavie on the number, 7,500. Really solid tee to green and approach coming in. And pretty quiet 29th place at the Masters. So I think he could be interesting as well. For a guy that, you know, we talk about all the time with Connors, Munoz, these type of guys. Interesting to see them both pop at the Masters. But those are guys that we're always talking about where if they make the cut, they've got the upside to just go out. Ortiz was another guy we called this on a couple weeks ago, and he goes on to win the thing. These guys, when they make the cut, it's like Reavie, Kevin Na. When these guys make the cut, they typically don't just burn out. They end up getting somewhere. They might not win the thing, but they're up there. And we've even seen Reavie win the thing and Na win the thing in the past. So there's just a couple guys like that, and Reavie's one that stands out for me.
Yeah, I like a lot of those guys in the upper 7K range. I am a big fan of those dudes. Let's actually go to the lower part. I like a Reavie call. I want to play a little bit JT Poston again. This could be a putting contest, one of the best Bermuda putters out there. Malnati, one of the best the Bermuda putters out there. You know, he's actually been playing really well. I mean, he had that stretch and then finished 21st, and his price dropped precipitously. I think you can get some value there at him at 7,100. And the thing is, I'm not really a big fan of many others, maybe a little bit of Norlander, maybe a little bit of Stenegger. You saw a little bump of Stenegger a couple weeks ago before he sort of faded after a couple of rounds. At that price, I think I can get behind him again. This could become a putting contest, one of the best out there. So I think I can play a little bit of Sneds down there this week. What do you like in the lower part?
The one I thought you would have said, man, right? The one that I just think is the crazy price here. And again, this is co-cracked last week, so be aware of this. But, you know, Harold Varner at 7,400, I'm guessing he'll be super chalky because the price doesn't really make any sense. If you look at the stats, they're off the charts in comparison. Played really well in Houston, 15th place, 13th at the Shriners, 7th back at the Wyndham, which is on Bermuda. Another guy waiting, you know, got to want to see another win here. So, you know, $7,400 on Varner. And weren't we paying like $10,000 for him just recently? Like, this is just surprising for me going down here at $7,400, at least in the $9,000s we've paid for him. So, I don't know. The price seems off for me for a guy that we're always cheering for, but it's not like he has a bad game. This is a great player that we're just, you know, this would be the type of field that we could see him pop. Maybe people aren't going back to him. And if that's the case, I'll definitely be back on him. Other couple guys, so Wise, a couple sucker guys that I like to play a lot, but Aaron Wise is one of them. He's always got upside if he gets through. Bermuda is his best surface. Played really solid at the Houston Open, got 11th place there. And if you go back to those other Bermuda Greens courses, 26th at the 11th place and 26th. What am I trying to say here, Kenny? 11th place at the Houston Open, 26th at the Bermuda, and 17th at the Sanderson. So again, all results on these types of courses. Maybe these greens suit him coming around with his game. Definitely like him. You mentioned JT Poston, probably gets some love, but he should. We always like him on Bermuda. Burned everyone as the cheap guy at the Masters at $6,300. I know a lot of people were using him to make the lineup work. I sort of liked it at $6,300. I thought it was a fair price. Definitely about right, but you know, it was a chance that if he got through, we could see something. Didn't quite happen, so maybe this does sour people a little. And this field is which is way more up his alley. 14th here last year amongst others. So I don't know. I think
Is way more up his alley. I mean, you know,
big time.
Of course. Yeah. So definitely.
Yeah. I love that. And another one that, you know, you didn't mention that, I guess maybe it's just my love for this guy, but Cam Davis, 7,200, you know, 6th at the Sanderson Farms, 15th at the Wyndham, Bermuda Greens, scorer for days. Loved him at 8,100. I'm definitely going to go anytime he's been 8,100. I've been all over him.
A little bit worried about the last time he played. Didn't he finish dead fucking last of the people that made the cuts?
My notes here, Kenny.
18 over or some shit like that.
My notes here are that, and I love it. That's what I want to see for these tournaments. But I put in my notes, played horrendous in bold letters here the last two events, actually. But he still made the cut. So that's my thing about this guy, is that he's got like 7 or 8, 9 cuts in a row, whatever it might be, played absolutely terrible at the last two, and at 7,200, now at 8,100, it's not as ideal. We've got a guy like Sam Burns up there at 8,000 this time. But if Cam Davis makes the cut at 7,200, dead fucking last, ain't going to cut it, you're right. But let's just say he doesn't do that. Let's say he goes back to what we've seen in the past of Cam Davis. Let's just say we do see this 20-under type event again. I want a guy that can bring me to the promised land, and that's a guy like Cam Davis. At 7,200, I also, regardless of those last two events, have quite a bit of faith in him, you know, in comparison to some of the others. You know, my boy Grillo, my old school guy that I used to love so much, man, he's been popping crazy for tee to green approach the last 50 rounds. Good showings at the Sanderson and the Safeway. But I never feel great about him, right? And so it's when it comes down to it, I'll play both of them. But I like Davis there at 7,200 straight. And then who else? Man, I don't even want to name these other guys here. Like Russell Knox, Henrik Norlander. These guys are possibilities. And then I don't know if it's just because I originally took over the spot for Mr. Brad Messersmith here. But I always got a little love for Keegan Bradley, man, on these types of courses. Fairways, greens. This guy's the same as Cam Davis. He missed the cut three of his last five, but he still has gained huge on tee to green and approach for both of those. And in between the made cuts, and in between, he's got a fourth at the Sanderson, which is also on Bermuda green. So at 7,000 even, I don't think he can kill you. And if he does, those lineups were dead anyway. So why not play him? Because when he does get through and crush, it's got a lot of upside for your lineup at 7,000. We haven't seen him do much in a while, but he's been right there with the numbers and the stats, Kenny. So I got to give some love back to him at 7,000. Anybody else here? Like, there's a lot of guys from 72 down to 7,000. Any of them stand out for you beyond what you mentioned?
I mean, I've always liked playing Ventura. I've always liked playing Maverick McNealy, those guys down there. I still haven't decided final thoughts on these bottom guys quite yet. So we'll see how that goes. Will Gordon's up there also, another favorite for the DFS land. So we'll see as the week goes on how much I like him. But at first glance, it's just too sort of convoluted right now. I'll dig deeper here shortly. Why don't we move on to the 6K range? Tampa, why don't you go ahead? It looks like you're rocking and rolling here.
Yeah, I what I really love is the 7K range so much that's why I just brought that up. Again, I mentioned at the top, you'll see why I want to get these heavier builds up the top there, because I think like 7,400 down to 7,000 has like 10 or 12 guys I can use and avoid most of this 6K range. Now, if we're talking about who stands out to me, not too many guys, man. Lucas Glover's won top 20 in both tee to green and approach over the last 50, even though he's missing every cut. So he's kind of like Keegan Bradley. He's not getting it done. It's large field only for me. I wouldn't use him in like my three max or my higher dollar stuff, but he does stand out a little. Adam Schenck, always like him. Again, if he makes the cut, can have upside, makes birdies. Tom Hoagie, better on Bermuda. Before the last two events, he was solid both tee to green and approach. 28th at the Sanderson, 27th at the Wyndham. These aren't record-breaking scores, but if he's the guy that rounds at your lineup and you get a top 30 out of him, that's the guy that I want in my lineup. So I like him. Johnny Vegas, I'll always go back and play a little bit of him. I think he's got upside. Chesson Hadley, like him better on Bermuda, so I think this is a good spot for him. Keith Mitchell, just another sucker play. Bermuda, Sea Island guy. This is a guy I can get back to. And then the other one, just to round it out, Kenny, and I'll let you roll here, is Robbie Shelton. Just, again, a gamer. What's his nickname? Is like Xbox or something they called him and said that was about him. Like, when he gets on, the upside is there. So I'll roll out with Robbie Shelton. Who else do you like down here in this 6,900 and below range?
My favorite play is Hollywood Hoagie. Tom Hoagie at $6,700. I think the books sort of know that too, because a lot of the people around him are really like 150, 200 to 1. He is 100 to 1 right now. Iron game, 12th in this field in the last 100 rounds of strokes gain approach. He's one of the best outside of Henley from 125 to 150 and 150 to 175, 6 from 125 to 150, 13th from 150 to 175 in the last 100 rounds. Really good on those medium length par fours. You're going to see a bunch of them, 400, 450 yards. He is my favorite play down in this range. My second favorite play and my final cash game cornerstone is going to be David Hearn at $6,600. The guy just never misses a cut here. This is just basically all course form and a little bit of recent form as well. Two top 15s in his last five events. So it's not like he's playing like garbage. And he's coming to a course he obviously loves, and I need a cheap guy to make the cut. He's my cheap guy to make the cut so I can afford Webb up top. So my four cash game cornerstones this week are going to be Webb Simpson at 11,200, Sebastian Munoz at 9,000, Brian Harman at 8,500, and David Hearn at $6,600. Leaves me, I think, $14,700 left to fill out the rest of your lineup. Plenty of room. Like we said, we love that 7K range. You're going to be able to find a couple of guys there to fill out the rest of your lineup. Other guys I'm going to play in this range, Ryan Armour, short course, coastal course. This is his shizzle. This is what he plays for. I like Ryan Armour a little bit down in this range. There was Camilo Viegas, another guy. I think he's won here in the past. Stone Cold Minimum
So we'll go ahead. I think Timothy Frank is another great follow on Twitter. I forget his Twitter handle, but go look up his name.
At Fantasy Golf Man.
Yeah, at Fantasy Golf Man. He sort of put it out there that the guys are playing really good tee to green. He's come out. He's won here in the past. I'll go ahead and take that at the stone cold minimum. Anybody else we missed this week?
No, I like your armor call, though. That's just one thing I will say to bring that up. The rest, you pretty much hit it. Like I said, I'm not loving this range. We'll see as the week goes on how, you know, I can come around on some of them. I liked Hoagie with you there. I was looking for a few others. I always like Shank to do some damage, but I think maybe I can get a couple of these guys in when I'm building and then make the other stuff at the top work, but even more. But, you know, I think a nice approach with, you know, some stars and scrubs here will work out just fine. And then, you know, if you got a bunch of lineups, then by all means mix some of these guys in the middle in your balance builds. But I really do like a stars and scrubs build here for this week.
All right. That sounds good, man. Let's get to our bets for this week. Tambo, why don't you go ahead?
Only got four so far, Kenny. I got Henley 28. I think the whole world's got that. The last time this happened though was the Houston Open. I think he was around like 30 or 33 to one in 2017 when he won the Houston Open. So I'm not missing it this time if it's going to be the case. I think Henley just suits the course so well. The stats are in line. Everything lines up that it should be his time. We'll see. 28 to one is a decent enough number that I can get behind it. CT Penn, not the best number, 70, but T5 with the each way. Burns 90, T5 with the each way. Poston 100, T5 with the each way. And then I might look to add, maybe I'll add English. Like I said, I'll look for a good number there. Only thing I've seen so far is like 30, 32 or something, 33. So I'll look for English. I do like that. You know, we talked a lot about him. And then maybe Viljeg, you know, top 20 or something on Camilo down there. You know, I'll at least use him in DFS. That was another one you brought up that I definitely like for, you know, making some stars and scrubs, super builds. So I'll go with that. What do you got?
All right. So I'm going, I got seven bets, but they're all 50 to one or more. I'm not betting any favorites. So I'm going a little bit different this week because I want to bet some of these from 50 to 100. I love all these guys. So it was really hard for me to narrow it down. So fuck it. I'm just going to list all of them. The first one's going to be Burns at 50 to one. I can't believe you got 90 to one. You got 90 to one on Burns.
I got to double check that now. Now you're making me worry about this. Let me just go check.
Yeah.
I'll check it.
All right. I got 50 to one on Burns, 55 to one on Doc, 66 to one on Fratelli, 71 on Pan. You know what? I'll make it six. I got Wallace 100 to one and Hoagie 100 to one. So I'll stick with the six. I don't want to go too crazy. So those are going to be my six for this week and no one shorter than 50 to one. All right. One and done's over. So
one done's over. And by the way, just for record checks here, because I was off. So I don't know how I must have misclicked a 70 with the still okay. 70. 70.
Still, that's a lot better than my 50.
A lot better than your 50. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that. That's 70. And I'll just check the other ones here. But yeah, the others are matching up. So we're good.
Okay. That sounds good. All right. Do we miss anything this week?
I don't think so, man. Like I said, no one and done. So, you know, that's about it. We're on to the next one here, RSM. And then we keep it rolling from there. It's just nonstop, right? So.
Yep. So I'm in Dallas right now, and I'm literally downtown Dallas. I probably picked the wrong Airbnb. Like, it's not the best neighborhood in the world. So if you don't hear from me next week, I probably got murdered. So that's what's going to happen since I'm in Dallas right now. What's up, Tambo?
I was going to say, you know what? The pod's over. People can leave if they want. Why don't you tell us the story about yesterday? I thought that was, you know, the Twitter, you know, the cart girl, the houses on the course, the Crown Royal. You didn't tell a story on this one. So add it to the end, and people can log off if they want.
So this course we played, it was Tour 18. It was in Dallas. I don't understand, like, the houses around there. It was like, some of them looked like hotels. It looked like Scarface's, Al Pacino's house in Scarface with, like, the world is yours, like, you know, and, like, the fountains out front and, like, you know, people doing Quaaludes and blowing the background in the by the pool and shit. You know, that's what it was, except, you know, these are, like, you know, redneck Texans doing that, not like Cuban, not Michelle Pfeiffer, who weighed 85 pounds because she did too much blow. It wasn't that, but I mean, still the same type of house that they had. And so the course we played was Tour 18 on the front nine, beautiful black girl, big booty, you know, big booty black girl. You know, we like big booty black girls. And she was wearing like this blue Spider-Man, like yoga pants type shit that I was like, I just couldn't stop staring at that. I just wanted to smack it the whole fucking time. I just wanted to smack it. Well, I wasn't going to do that because I wasn't going to get arrested.
And so on the back, and there's like different types of girls. There's a different girl on the front than on the back. So on the back nine we played, it was this, you know, little white girl, blonde hair, really cute, wearing the same fucking pants. And I was like, what the fuck? Is it their uniforms? Like, are they required to wear these crazy-ass yoga pants to make their ass look fucking incredible? It worked out because I just threw money at them, you know, like tipping them and shit like that. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. So Torrey Teen's like a replica course. So you play like different types of like replica holes. So the last three holes is Amen Corner. So it was actually pretty cool to do that on Masters Sunday. So it was a lot of fun. But I'm literally staying in the hood right now. I'm scared for my life.
Yeah, so I was wondering about that. And the people
actual place, like the apartment that I'm in, is beautiful. It's nice. But like once you step outside the apartment, like I'm about to walk to this Irish bar right now, and I'm a little bit worried about myself.
Okay.
A little bit worried.
Oh man, I thought it looked good. I think you'll be all good. I mean, the people want to know though. What did you tell her you had to do it for the followers, for the picture?
Yes, I just told her the truth. I was like, people don't believe me. I put the text out. Like these women are wearing these yoga pants, like crazy Spider-Man yoga pants. And she was like, okay, I'll take the picture. She was not the sharpest tool in the shed. How about that?
We'll just say that. All right. Tell the people where they can find you, Kenny.
You can find me at KendoVT on Twitter. You can find me at gupscorner.com. Like I said, Gup went ham last week on GPPs, winning that 50K. He has the showdown shit. It's tight. Come and find it out. I got my cash shit every week, you know, to go on with my bets and my favorite bets. Go check out gupscorner.com right now. Check the Twitter feed for the discount codes, all that good shit. Tambo.
Find me on Twitter at Toetag and Tambo. Hit me up there if you have any questions. Other than that, head on over to rotogrinders.com, rotogrinders.com/DJ, and get yourself $5 off the first month. Got the Tuesday night show for PGA with Noto and Cards, always popping. Wednesday, the lineup HQ show, best tool in the game. Be able to go in and build your lineups, put everything in play there. And then all my football stuff that I'm doing, NFL, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Check me out there if you guys have any more questions. rotogrinders.com/DJ. Sign up and get yourself a discount.
All right, that sounds good. Usually there's a Masters hangover, but I didn't feel it on this pod. I thought it was pretty damn good. It's going to be the RSM Classic. It's a pretty decent field. Let's win some motherfucking money, DJ Nation.